are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
Well, first of all, I don't think all voices need to be represented equally. I think that some of us need to learn to shut up and listen a bit more and to amplify the voices of people who've traditionally been shut out of the conversation or muted.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This is Holly, editor at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. The 2018 anniversary of the centenary of some women winning the right to vote in the UK inspired us to launch the 100 Women podcast series, in which we are interviewing 100 women working in the field of education or in the public eye in order to catalogue their lives, celebrate their successes, discuss the challenges they face, and discover what they would like to pass on to the next generation.
This week, listen to Holly Gardner interview Penny Rabiger, freelance consultant for social enterprises and education organisations. Find out about how teachers' moral purpose can define career achievements, the versatility you need to have to work in startup organisations, and what the UK can learn from Finland's stance on politics and education.
This is Holly Gardner, editor at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. And today I'm talking to Penny Rabiger. Hi Penny, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Good, really good. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them what you do and where you do it?
Sure. So I work as a freelance consultant. I help social enterprises and education organisations with clear moral purpose on their journey from startup to grown up. And my work involves focusing in on their messaging, their business proposition, defining and reaching the market, business development and team development, and things like that.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. What's your career background that got you to this stage to be freelance?
Well, I was a teacher, so I've got a BA in social anthropology, and I did my teacher's training abroad and I got a master's in education. So I was a teacher and form tutor for over a decade, 4 years in primary, secondary for the rest of the time. And I left teaching in 2007 and joined the Key for School Leaders when it was a sort of funded pilot project, and I stayed there for about 7 years and ended up being Director of Business Development, which was new to me but fabulous learning curve. And I left there in 2014, and since I've worked with a number of charities, social enterprises, including Challenge Partners and the Finnish education organisation Lifter, where I'm doing most of my freelance work at the moment. So I just kind of developed a passion for helping organisations on that journey, really.
Yeah. And do you miss being in the classroom?
I do. I don't know if I could teach in this system now, but definitely part of my work takes me into the classroom to see what's happening, and I'm doing a little bit of training with teachers at the moment as well. So that's nice to be able to keep a hand in. And yeah. I'm school governor, so
great.
Hang out at schools.
And was there a particular reason that made you leave teaching?
So we came back from living abroad, and I realised that to get back into teaching here, I'd probably have to go on quite a long journey. And the job came up at the Key, and I thought, oh, that's a really interesting prospect. So took that.
Oh, great. So what career achievement are you most proud of?
I think probably I'm proud of my ability to make these large changes in my life while sort of trying to stay true to my moral purpose. You know, I was born and raised in London, but by some coincidence started teaching abroad, and that meant I had to learn a different language while training. And by the time I left there, you know, I was bilingual, reading novels in Hebrew for pleasure.
Wow.
And then coming back with my young family, so my kids were 5 and 2, and my partner was starting a new job here. So I think making these massive changes but staying focused on what I wanted to achieve in terms of moral purpose is something that I'm really proud of. And obviously I'm really proud of the journey that the Key made from being this kind of pilot service to a subscription service that is now in about 50% of schools nationally. So that was a great, great journey to go on.
And what is the biggest challenge you face in your job now?
Working freelance can be quite nerve-wracking. And we were just talking earlier, weren't we, about the fact that it's really nice to be your own boss, but sometimes you kind of miss actually the grueling, fighting your way to work to sit in an open plan office with a bunch of people.
That's true.
But I think also the biggest challenge with working in the world of startups and organisations that are really trying to make a dent on the universe means that you have to flip between quite varying roles. So you need to be sort of top of your game preparing pitches and presentations, but also down and dirty doing kind of fiddly administrative tasks and going and buying things, you know, for the office, or I don't know, just like little bitty things mixed in with things that quite large and life-changing.
Yeah.
So I guess you have to be quite organised and flexible.
Yeah, you have to kind of muck in and do a bit of everything, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, organisation is key. And how about when you're in the classroom? What was the biggest challenge you faced there?
Well, I think the language was difficult for me to begin with. And I used to get the kids to write on the board for me because I couldn't actually read and write in Hebrew yet. Behaviour was always really challenging, but because I hated school and I was so naughty, I think I had a real affinity for the very naughty ones. So I really wanted to try and crack them. So I think probably sort of keeping it mellow in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing you would change in education, what would it be?
Oh, the one thing I would change would be to absolutely disconnect education from politics. I know it's not actually possible, but if I could, I think if we did that, we could truly make education a force for good and base it on equity for all. You know, education is the big political football, and while it is, we'll never have a system that does the right thing by its workforce and the young people it's supposed to serve. And I really love, you know, part of my work with Lifter at the moment means I get to spend time in Finland, and I love the Finnish attitude to teachers' professionalism and autonomy, and also the country's attitude towards youth and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both are given a respect and honour that we really don't do here. So I think, yeah, I would separate education from politics.
Absolutely, yeah, I think that's a great answer. And I read in your bio that you have a role on the steering committee of the BAMED network. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it all started with a Twitter conversation about inequality of opportunity and whether, you know, Amjad Ali as an Asian man or Alana Gay as a Black Caribbean woman, which one of them is less likely to get a post as a head teacher in our schools today? Mm. And there was a sort of call to arms to do something to address this within the sector. And I just kind of shot my way in and said, would it be appropriate for me to be on that group and to help make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a person, you know, I'm racialized as white, but I'm also of Jewish heritage, and I really feel it's important to see and celebrate difference and not pretend towards some kind of color blindness or pretend there's no bias.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's how I got involved in that.
And what do you think we can do to make education a more inclusive space, representing all voices equally?
Well, first of all, I don't think all voices need to be represented equally. I think that some of us need to learn to shut up and listen a bit more and to amplify the voices of people who've traditionally been shut out of the conversation or muted. And I think, you know, being nice to everyone equally or being so-called colourblind, that's not inclusive. And I think actually the opposite is needed. So we need to see difference rather than pretend we don't, and actively encourage diverse voices in a way that's not tokenistic.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, you know, challenging our own and each other's biases on who gets to lead, who sits around the boardroom table and the way we do things. I can say as a chair of governors, for example, I deliberately sort out people that are different from each other in as many ways as I can and that represent our local community in all its vibrancy, so I'm in Haringey. But, you know, if those board members are asking challenging questions and raising points that we haven't considered before, we'll do well by the children we serve. And if they're all in agreement and they all come from the same background, have the same perspective, we're just lost, really.
Yeah. And also, so in March we celebrate International Women's Day. What is your hope for change with regards to gender equality in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my hope is that we wouldn't need an International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think we need to change the narrative of who gets to lead, and I think that means the great white male has had their day. And I hope my wish would be I hope that we don't need International Women's Day one day.
Yeah, linking in with what you've already said, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we'll just move on finally to our quick fire round. What are you currently reading?
So I'm reading a book called Slay in Your Lane, The Black Girl Bible. It's a really interesting book and part of my journey to educate myself and challenge myself.
Mm-hmm. And do you know who's the author?
Yeah, so it's two women authors. One is called Yomi Adigoke, and the other one is called Elizabeth Uvibinene.
Great. And what three women would you invite to a dinner party and why?
Oh, gosh, you know, I really agonise over this because I'm not great with celebrity. I kind of rail against celebrity. So I'd probably just invite some of the brilliant women that I already know.
Good idea.
But if you pushed me, I would I'd invite Toni Morrison, the author of Bluest Eyes, Our Baby, Song of Solomon. Bjork, who's a brilliant musician and artist. And Floella Benjamin, because she's the first TV presenter that I loved as a child.
Ah, good answers. So we haven't had any of them before. Good ones. And tell me, what's one thing you've learned today?
Well, it's only Monday morning, so I learned that the cat doesn't like the food that we bought it. And also, if you go for a run and you don't stretch properly, you hurt.
Have you already been for a run this morning?
No, God, no. Yesterday, very slowly.
Oh, that's great. Where can our listeners find out more about you, Penny?
So, Twitter. What's my Twitter handle? @Penny_10, T-E-N. I have a WordPress blog site, which is 10 pence more. LinkedIn. And not Facebook.
That's brilliant. Great. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, so early as well.
It's been lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to Teacher Toolkit. You can find out more about 100 Years, 100 Women on our website, teachertoolkit.co.uk, or follow us on social media using the hashtag TTKit100Women.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.